Hey everyone, today's episode is from my keynote at the No Bull Conference earlier this year. I was so excited to share the stage with Gary V to get in front of people on stage for the first time in over a year. So I had to share this speech with all of you as well. You're going to learn about how you can get more done in your day carrying $100 worth of value and the biggest mistake that people make when negotiating a deal. Tweet me at David Meltzer your favorite takeaway from today's episode and check the show notes to see how you can text me or email me at any time.
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
Talking about today, decision-making in investments, but the decision-making in investments is the same as in life because your biggest investment's yourself. But I will go through that. The first thing about investing and making the decision for investing is to know your what. And the number one what that people don't know when they're investing is timing and risk tolerance. I can't tell you how many people ask me, should I invest in real estate? Should I invest in crypto? Should I invest in this or that? You don't have a clue until they tell you what their timing and risk tolerance is. And you need to decipher what that is by knowing what you want will determine what your timing and risk tolerance is, allowing you to make quick decisions to see if it's aligned, synergistic, or supplementary to what you want. And most people are afraid to explore what they want. They're afraid to take inventory of what they want, to look at personally, what do I want today? Personally, what do I want today? And people say to me, well, if I'm only looking at today, Dave, do I have objectives? Do I have long-term goals? How does this all work? I know you talk about detaching yourself from an outcome. How does that reconcile itself with having goals and objectives? The way that we reconcile it is where you're putting your emotions when you are making that reconciliation. What do I mean by that? When I'm determining my what and I say to myself, what do I want personally? What do I want personally today? That allows me to make my decisions today because I know personally that I want to spend this much amount of time on my health or with my family or with these certain activities that I get paid for, whatever it may be. But when I'm deciding what I want today, of course I have in mind what I want for my future. So if I want to live a long life, my personal values differ than if I want to die young. By the way, I was with the Sadhguru last week, if any of you know who that is, and he gave me this extraordinary piece of advice. I asked him, how do I live a long life? And he said, there's two ways to live a long life. One, be miserable. It'll be the longest life you've ever lived, which I thought was really cool. And then two, be productive. Productive or miserable people are the people that live the longest lives. And the more productive we are, actually, the longer you will live. And so these values of making decisions for the investment in actual business or in yourself are determinative upon your inventory of your values that you take every single day. So make sure you put into your habit machine asking yourself, what do I want today personally? And then secondly, ask yourself, what do I want experientially? Part of investing and making decisions and what we want to invest in is to know that we're on a journey, right? I believe in enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. That's the definition of a successful journey, a happy journey. And you have to know, what do I want today experientially, so you can have a weighted balance of the inventory of values that you take. Too many people, how do I live a balanced life, Dave? I watch all your videos. It seems like you have, you know, all this time for every single thing. How do you balance all that stuff? I don't. I have a weighted balance. I believe that 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. So I make sure that I weight and balance the inventory of values that I'm taking every day with a certain amount of time, because time's the only constant man-made construct that determines what a day is. Right? Time is a man-made construct that determines what a day is. Your productivity will allow you to spend time differently, or your miserableness will allow you to spend time differently and determines what the perception of that time is. But if you're not taking inventory of what you want to experience, you're not going to be as productive, accessible, or gracious with your time, and time will not move in the manner in which you want or provide the results that you want, and you won't make the decisions accordingly. So know your what by what personally you want, what experientially you want, and then, of course, what do you want to give? We talked about productivity giving you this long life. Productivity is giving of service or value. What do you want to give? And think about it every day and prioritize it by what you want and have a weighted balance between those three. And then finally, the most difficult, what do I want to receive? Most people don't think about what I want to receive. You can't give what you don't receive. I know I talk about that a lot in forgiveness, but I believe that should be true in a monetary sense as well, which is why my formula to empowering people to be happy starts with making a lot of money. Money will not buy you love or happiness, which I discussed before with a lot of you, but if you shop for the right things, it will. So money is the first thing that I want to receive. And I'll tell you why. I've made a lot of money in my life. I've lost a lot of money and made it back. But I did not feel worthy at any time of what I received. How many people feel worthy of everything they have? You won't, anyone? It's crazy, right? It took me years to put my hand up. I didn't realize that I didn't feel worthy. I loved to give. I hated to receive. I felt guilty. Anybody feel guilty when they receive something? They feel guilty for asking? Yeah, a lot more hands go up. Yeah, that's an interference, a void, a shortage from you and what you're already connected to and through. The problem with that, because we're blocking what's already ours. We're creating more interference to what we perceive we want and we tell people we want, but in actuality, we're lying to ourselves that we're worthy of it. So you have to identify through taking inventories or values, what do I want to receive today? I have a list of what I want to receive today. Monetarily, what I want to receive, what I want to receive in actual things. So I carry what's called 120 energy. This helped me determine my worthiness, to help me shift my energy of receiving. So I wake up in the morning. I wake up in the morning and I dream about having $100 bills all over my room. Right? I make a few prayers in the morning. Of course, I say thank you. Ask God for at least 10 people I can help every single morning. But my first stretch of my meditation is to dream my room's full of $100 bills. And then I dream about handing them out to every single person that I have. And I think about what that feels like, and I feel it in my heart what that feels like. Does anybody here have a $20 bill? Anybody have 20? Come on up. So what I think about when I think about worthiness, and for anyone that has problems receiving and feels guilty or bad when they feel sorry, I feel bad about that. You have 20? Cool. Can I give you $100 for 20? Is that fair? Thank you. Okay, so give them a big round of applause. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. That's what I practice every morning. I practice that every morning. I dream about giving $100 bills and asking for 20 back. Because part of the worthiness that occurs is that I can't articulate the quantitative value to be greater than what I'm asking for. And so I feel guilty or not worthy of it. I lie and tell you I do, but if I believe full-heartedly that I'm giving you $100 and only asking for 20 back, I feel really good about it. And so I want to make sure that quantitatively that I can articulate in my business, the activity I get paid for, because I don't believe in work, right? I believe in activity I get paid for, activity I don't get paid for. I don't believe in jobs. I believe in occupations. What occupies me every day is what's going to manifest itself. These are all subtle changes that you can make so that this value that you have exudes itself. I'll give you an example. The energy that I carry, I call it 120 energy. It carries into a room when I step on a stage, but it carries into a family event. I went to a party. I walked in a family party. And I literally looked at my favorite nephew, who thinks I'm his hero. And usually he lights up, runs up, gives me a big hug, big kiss. And he literally looks right through me. Has anyone had that experience where someone, you come in and like look right through you? And it was one of the most disheartening things. And then I look over at my mom, nothing. So I turned around and I said to myself, I'm leaving and I'm going to check my energy. Because I'm obviously not carrying 120 energy. Have you ever seen someone that comes into a room and lights it up, everybody gets up, or you feel them and you turn around? This is a form of intuition. This is inside of you. This is an energy of you that you can utilize to receive and make the best decisions. Your intuition, you can practice your intuition, by the way. As I finish up the example, as I practice the intuition and I feel inside of me, I remind myself what it felt like to have $100 and to give it. And when I walked back into the room, sure enough, my nephew came running up to me and my mom spun around, excited to see me. No difference than the energy I was carrying. what I call 120 energy. I felt worthy. I felt worthy of being there. No blame, no shame, no justification, no separation, no interference. You can do this all the time. Anybody want to know how to practice intuition? Anyone believe it's a muscle? Let me teach you how to practice intuition. And when you're on an airplane, hopefully soon, sooner than not, or you're sitting at some place, stare at the crack in the seats in front of you. Right? I'm on an airplane. I stare on the cracks, and I wait to see if I can make the person in front of me move around. And then eventually keep on staring, and eventually they'll feel me so much that they'll actually look back through that crack. It works. You have to practice it. Now you know you're carrying energy. There's a lot more to being a lot more to receiving than just providing or articulating the quantitative value. You have to feel it. It has to be part of your quantum energy, a frequency that you can emit. And so you need to know your what and then have a weighted balance utilizing time as the quantitative measure of what is prioritized according to your what that you take inventory of every day. Why is that so important? Because when things arise in the day and you need to make a decision, you know exactly why and how you're making your decision according to the values that you've already set, which are what we want today according to a holistic approach and weighted to what I'm doing. And that will help you determine your timing and your risk tolerance of what you are looking at. Now, another what that you need to know is you need to know what the market is. You have to know what the market is. So people will talk about crypto right now and know nothing about the market. Right, the market, you need to know what it is. My favorite way is to move to the next step is know your who. Right, know your who, find the expert that has been there for 30 or 40 years or someone that knows the market and can tell you when it's time to buy or when it's time to sell. Can you think of an easier way to make money? Wouldn't it be easy? If I was going to buy a stock, I'd like to have Warren Buffett's number and say, hey, man, do you think this thing's oversold or overbought? You laugh, but think about it. Why are we determined? Because he knows what the market is. He knows what the market is. Now, if you know your what with weighted balance, et cetera, the next step to making decisions is to know your who. Because the easiest way to make a decision is to find someone that already has the directions to get there, right? The easiest way to get to where we want to go is to find someone that's already there and ask them for directions. So you need to know your who, but also know who you're dealing with in a transaction as you're making an investment, either in yourself or in business. If you're making that investment, the biggest mistake that I think people make is they trust people without vetting them. I think it's fine to trust. I trust everyone. And that got me in big trouble. As you know, I lost over $100 million trusting a lot of people because I just assumed the best in them. I'm looking for the best. We all like to look for the best in people. But the part that I didn't get was knowing my who was also an accountability to vet the shit out of them. How many times have you been in a conversation, an investment conversation or a business conversation, and something doesn't make sense, but you don't ask any questions because you're afraid you're going to offend the person? I don't want to ask him, you know, what do you have any revenue? Or I didn't want to ask him how many employees. I'd hurt his feelings. I'd offend him. And then you go ahead and do the business or make the investment, and what? You feel manipulated, cheated, lied, oversold, back-end sold, and then you feel offended that they ripped you off. Wouldn't you rather think that you offended them by asking for the truth than feeling offended that they stole from you? Trust everyone. Look for the light, the lessons in everyone, but bet the shit out of them. Ask the hard questions. Be more interested than interesting. Too many people love the deal, right? Emotions are the deal killers to me. People buy and invest on emotion, and then they back it up with logical reasons. The problem with logic, it has no place, as I mentioned earlier, logic has no place with emotions at all. Logic will not change or validate your feelings. So if you're making your investments on a feeling, right? I like that guy. I like this deal. No, you don't like a deal. Like Jim was talking about, it has been able to be articulated. Quantitative value exceeds what you're giving them. That's a good investment. Right? A good investment is the $20 he gave me to get 100. That's quantitatively a good investment. There's no emotions. There's just math and activity. If you feel bad, then go do something. Don't think about it. You're not going to be able to rationalize yourself out of the emotion. Activity and pursuit will instantly relieve and get you out of that emotion. So logic has no place with emotions. And people buy on emotion or invest in emotion for those logical reasons. You have to be able to extract the emotions and ask the hard questions when you're making decisions. You are not going to offend anyone by asking for the truth and continually looking for the truth. You are just saving yourself and the other person from a terribly negative situation where both of you feel bad. And so we need to know who we're dealing with, and we also need who can help us, like I said. So find the expert. If you're looking for commercial real estate, multi-unit real estate in a certain area, find the person who's been there the longest and ask them that tough question. Hey, can you tell me when the market's oversold? Because you want to buy. And then, hey, call me back when you think it's overbought so I can sell. You don't have to hit the top and the bottom. If you can, number one, know what you want, find somebody that has it, ask them whether it's oversold or overbought, you are now living in the margins of millionaires. The simplest way to make money, to make decisions on investments. It's that simple. I would rather leverage the experience of someone with 30 or 40 years of doing something than take on my own expertise, situational knowledge. Somebody asked me earlier, Dave, how the hell did you lose $100 million? Well, because I didn't ask for help. I owned a golf course with $120 million by itself, never called one person that owned a golf course. You know what happened after I owned the golf course and lost it? Same thing that happened to Dr. J, who also bought a golf course in Georgia and lost it the same way I did. Got the same advice from me after people heard how stupid I was for not asking for help and knowing my who. You know what I heard? Never be the first owner of a golf course. You mean I could have just used, excuse how old I am, I could have just used the yellow pages when I built the golf course and built my first golf course and called anybody that owned a golf course and said, hey man, I'm thinking about building a golf course. Sam Snead's the designer. It's going to be amazing, all bent grass. We have 2,000 acres. I'm going to develop a convention center, a hotel, and a whole bunch of luxury properties. What do you think? And the guy just would have said, oh, dude, you want to be the third owner of a golf course after the idiot that bought it goes bankrupt. It sounds funny, but it's true. How many times do we do that? If you want a simple solution on how to make the best decisions in investment, know your what and know your who. And when you find the who, make sure you trust them and vet the shit out of them and find an expert in the space that can tell you just three simple things, right? When to buy or sell. You don't have to be the top or the bottom. If you consistently through all your investment, find an expert, buy when it's low and sell when it's high, not at the top or the bottom, just low or high, that margin will aggregate itself, compound on itself. It's the margins of millionaires. And it's not that much work. I don't believe in work anyway. It's not that much activity to get paid. How many people know or feel they get so busy working, they forget to make money? That's what Jim was talking about at the end, right? You get so busy working, you forget to make money. When you're taking inventory of your what and your who, you will make money. It's impossible not to make money. Because you're looking at the math every single day and you're finding the margins of millionaires and you're looking at the activity that you have and you're utilizing your values of personal, experiential, giving and receiving weighted to the objective that you have, which hopefully is to make a lot of money so you can help a lot of people and have a lot of fun and be happy. It's that simple. Step by step. The problem is consistency, right? It's so difficult to do something every day. It sounds easy. Oh, take inventory of my values every day. Well, I tell people all the time, you want to change your life? Try saying thank you every day, right? The two things that have changed my life the most and have changed other people's lives, they write me, they call me, they DM me. They say, oh my God, Mr. Belcher, you're amazing. You changed my life. I say thank you before I go to bed and when I wake up. And I'm thinking, "Woo! I learned that when I was 3. But if you do it for 30 straight days, I guarantee it'll change your life. I guarantee it. There's no one that has done it that hasn't told me that it would change their life. I have been around the greatest thought leaders, from Bob Proctor to Deepak Chopra to the Sadhguru to Sharon Leck, any of the people that you read, they're all on the Transformational Leadership Council. We sit around talking about the same shit all day long. We need to be grateful. We need to say thank you. I learned that before I was 3. I've studied physics, quantum physics, and metaphysics. All tell me that saying thank you is the most powerful thing. And it's free. It takes about 0.1 seconds a day. But yet, it's so hard to be consistent. You know how hard it is to be consistent? Who here thinks they can say thank you for 30 straight days? Yeah, almost everyone raises their hand. And although we do it and think that we do it, by tonight, half of you won't say thank you. Despite all the facts that I just gave you, all the amazing people that believe in this, including you, because I know all of you believe it. By tomorrow morning, another half of you won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us won't say thank you. I've been teaching this stuff for 16 years, and it took me 9 months before I could say thank you every day for 30 days. Took me 9 months. I know how hard it is to be consistent. So if it's that hard to be consistent, to say something that takes 0.1 seconds every single day, think how difficult it is to take inventory of your values every day and then apply it to the who. Set yourself up for success by lowering the bar, lowering the expectation that your senses, your physical being, your own cellular memory is just plain stupid. And we create resistance for ourselves because we are so stupid physically. So in order to create the consistency to make those good decisions, you have to rely on something other than your senses, right? We have to rely on something. So we have to lower the bar. We have to write things down. We have to create activity that will stimulate us called motivation. We can use fear. We can use caffeine. We can use whatever it is. But you have to understand, motivation will just get you up, get you back up, get you started, get you back started. It's not going to get you there, right? That's why I love Gary, right? Nobody juices me like Gary, right? He is extremely motivational. But he's not going to get you there. What's going to get you there are disciplined habits, consistent, persistent behavior by taking inventory and knowing your what, knowing your who, and then knowing your how. Right, this is all theoretically great, Dave, but how am I going to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you how, because you're going to implement the mathematical equation of luck. What? Yes, I'm going to make you all lucky. Who here wants to be lucky? All right, good. I'm going to teach you the mathematical equation of luck. In order to get you there, you need to be a student. Now, I know half of you are like, shit, I hate school. I hate being a student. Well, guess what? Being a student doesn't mean going to school. It doesn't even mean to study. What it truly means to me by being a student, by utilizing the mathematical equation of luck, is start paying attention to, focusing in on the what you want, and then add the intention. Attention plus intention. Start thinking, saying, doing, and believing exactly what you want and from who. Start attention plus intention equals coincidence. And when all the coincidences start happening in your favor of what you think, say, and do, people will be like, oh my God, he's so lucky. That's the mathematical. That's the how. So how do we implement that? I use my calendar, something very sophisticated. I use my calendar and I study it with the mathematical equation of luck, with a lens of productivity, of how much value I'm going to provide according to the inventory of my values, accessibility, the lens of how accessible am I to others to stay in the flow, to provide value and service according to my values, and of course, the lens of gratitude, always seeking the light, the love, and the lessons, the abundance in everything I do for the greater good through me for others. And if you take that kaleidoscope of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude, you will see things clearly to make the decisions according to the weighted values of your what and your who, and you will know your how. Utilizing my calendar, I separate things by activity I have planned, activity I don't have planned, and my sleep. Those three things, very simple. Activity I have planned, I have the 5-20 rule, right? I think people visit too much when they don't want to visit. Right. If I want to visit, I want to prioritize those people most relative to me to visit because I know I'm still working under the construct of man-made time. I only have 24 hours in a day. My wife one time when I was younger and a terrible husband, I was trying, but I just didn't know what I was doing. So forgive me. I would take phone calls at the table with my wife and my daughters. And I'd get up and take these phone calls after, you know, working back then, after the activity I got paid for. And I come back, and one day my wife finally changed my life because she looked at me and she said, why is it you care about people you don't even know more than us? Like, what are you talking about? I'm doing this for you. What are you talking about? She's like, you sit there visiting for the last half hour with people you don't even know or barely know, and your family's right here and you're not visiting with us. So I said to myself, that's right. I want to visit with the people closest to me. I want to visit with my old friends. I want to visit with my family. I want to visit with my children. So I created a 5-20 rule. 5-minute phone calls, 20-minute meetings. That's my objective. Can't always meet it. I have exceptions. 5-minute meetings, 20-minute interviews. I take my exceptions. But it's amazing how quickly things get done when I have a clear objective of why we're communicating to the benefit of both of us to create abundance and mutual benefit by not visiting. After 5 minutes on a phone call, you're visiting. You can determine whether or not you're visiting, but most phone calls should last 5 minutes and most meetings should last 20 as an objective. Sometimes you need an exception. Visit with the people that you want to visit with. All of these things will allow you to make the better decisions to create a world that you want, not what other people want, what's missing, or what you don't want, what you want. And by studying the activity that you have planned with the 5-20 rule and then studying the activity you don't have planned, you know, people waste away the day because nothing's planned. When I see the empty space in my calendar, that is just a serious invitation to be productive, accessible, and gracious. I just go ahead and start listing out all the things I want to get done, an hour for my health, meditation, phone calls, whatever. I usually make about 10 phone calls a day to people that are following me, that aren't expecting, just to ask how I can be of service. And I derive more activity I get paid for from calling people and asking them how I can be of service. And how do you have time to do that? People are amazed when I just call them back or I give them my cell phone because I don't visit. When I ask people, hey, look, just be concise. Let me know how I can be of service. It doesn't take that long and I will be able to help you or allow myself to find someone that can help you. Utilize your time effectively, what you have planned, what you don't have planned. And then finally, your sleep. I think sleep's the number one habit that people ignore. You know, I coach a lot of people and I have a sleep coach. Sleep coach to me is the most important coach I have. It reminds me, I'll coach some NFL, NBA guys, and it's hilarious as they come out of the league and they'll tell me, I'm not really sure I need a business coach, Dave. I'm like, oh, so you're one of the greatest football players of all time, and you've had a coach since you were 5 years old, and you probably have some natural ability in football, but yet you need a coach. Do you somehow think you're one of the world's best business people? How is it that you're the world's best football player and still needed a coach, but you're definitely not one of the world's best business people and you don't need a coach? Get a sleep coach. 8 hours on average, the habit that you spend, 8 hours, and you probably don't understand sleep. You don't focus or pay attention or intention on your sleep. I do. It's so important. My tomorrow starts today. I've twisted up all the man-made constructs of time in order to utilize it, including noting the speed of thought moves faster than the speed of light so I can bend time. But even more importantly, my tomorrow starts at 9 p.m. tonight, Pacific time, so midnight here. What does that mean? No, I don't wake up at 9. I start my day because I want to plateau and grow. So many people that I meet, they live the myth of Sisyphus, like in Camus' The Stranger. They push this boulder to the top of the hill every day, and it rolls back down to the bottom the next day. And then they call me and say, Dave, I'm stuck. Why do I keep getting the same results? I'll tell you why. Because you are not plateauing and growing. You're not transcending to your higher frequency by unwinding, putting yourself, your body, mind, and soul in a position, number one, to recover, but two, to transcend. You know, our egos are great to protect our embodiment. They're horrible things when it comes to empowering. What does that mean? That our egos create interference to the great source of power, light, and love that's always connected to us. So when we sleep, our ego is out of the way because ego is a conscious reaction to a trigger. And so if we can get the ego out of the way and transcend while we sleep and then remember, right, recollect, remember, remind. Are you getting the importance of words? I look them up all the time. One of the greatest advents ever is that internet just for the ability to instantly work up what words actually meant. I used to make fun of the people that walked around with the dictionary or thesaurus and they look up stuff. Now I'm jealous that I didn't when I was younger because it's so accessible, the information of what a word means. But think about all the re-words and the in-words. If you want to study words, it'll change your life. Look up intuition, insight, inspiration. Look up remind, recollect, remember, and you'll realize how important sleep is. So that you can wake up at your highest frequency, utilize some sort of quiet period in order to determine the baseline of where you want to start your day so you can plateau and grow, not start at the bottom again. So you tell yourself, man, I'm mad. That's not where I was in this morning. I'm going to stop. So, and I'll get to that because I think that's how we find our why. So we know our what, we know our how, we know our what, our who, and our how. Now we can base and make decisions on our now. So how do we know our now? Anybody ever hear the saying, you need to be present? Anybody hear that? Got it. Did I wear you guys out earlier? We're not loving Dave here? Raise your hand. All right, cool. So that screwed me up all the time. I was trying to grapple with, what do you mean be present? And I came up with this idea of knowing your now. What does that mean? Well, I hate to use this because I hate statistics, but there was only one statistic I ever knew to be true. And that was 99% of all statistics are made up. That's the only statistic I ever knew to be true. Then I owned a golf course, started playing golf all the time, and I learned a second statistic that's true. 100% of all short putts don't go in. Guaranteed. So that was true. True? Yes? Maybe? All right. But the most important statistic to be present is 100% of the things you do now get done. 100% of the things you do now get done. The difference between successful people and other people is successful people get things done, and you'll get them done 100% of the time, and allowing you to make decisions of how you want to invest in yourself and or your business or other people's businesses or products, services, or solutions or whatever else you want to pay attention or give attention to according to the inventory of your values. You got to know your now. And you can't know your now without knowing your what, your who, and your how. You can't. But if you're capable of understanding what you want to do right now, prioritizing by what's most important, and if anyone hasn't seen Eisenhower's Matrix of Important versus Urgency, look that up. You need to do what's important according to your values first, not what's urgent. Delegate what's urgent if it's not important. Too many people spend their whole day in urgency, and they don't get anything according to their value, synergistic or supplementary to their value, done. Nothing of quantitative value, allowing them to be so busy working, they forget to make money because everything's urgent. You need to know your now. Now, finally, in order to make effective decisions, you need to know your why. It's last. Too many people waste their life in the great myth of why. Oh, I need to find my why. I'm just not passionate about what I'm doing. You already have your why. That's why I put it after the what, the who, the how, and the now, because now you can apply your why. And we apply our why by understanding fear and the practice of ending fear with four steps that you need to do to know your why. According to what, who, how, and now. Number one, you need to be able to identify what you're afraid of. You need to be able to identify when you're afraid. I mentioned earlier, there's two kinds of fears. There's primal fear, fight, flee, feed, and the other F word that Gary likes to say. And then there's secondary fears. Secondary fears are the needs of the egos that trigger that release of the ego. Right, this idea when we're in that fight or flee mode, blood actually leaves our brain and goes into our body because you don't need your brain. Well, there's a problem. How many people make decisions in the ego consciousness? In other words, they're making decisions with no blood in their brain. Right? Then we end up accelerating in the wrong direction, wondering why we're not where we want to be because we have said or thought or done stupid stuff. Because we've released all the blood from our brain and acted without it. The most powerful thing, if we tried to recreate it, we all couldn't afford it. You think Bezos is rich? The technology that exists between your ears is extraordinary into the trillions of dollars. Trillions and trillions of dollars. And yet you're going to go ahead and let it lay there because you've triggered it with some need, like the need to be inferior, superior, separate, the need to be angry, frustrated, guilty, resentful, offended. You know how much time, money, emotion, and relationships that I've wasted just being offended? What I've learned about the need to be offended is it's the easiest need to feed. If we could feed the world food as quickly as we could feed our need to be offended, everybody would be fat. There'd be abundance of it. I don't know why everyone has such an ease of being able to be offended by somebody else's experience or someone being offended by my experience. But that will trigger the ego, which will release the blood from your brain and just allow your dumb effing senses to take over, and your body will say, do, and think, or say, do, and act really badly or poorly, putting ourselves farther away, creating void shortages and obstacles and interference to what we want. So knowing what we want may be a good guide to actually keeping ourselves at a baseline. So one, we can identify the needs of our egos and start practicing identifying them. The better we are at identifying them, then we can go ahead and utilize ourselves in a better manner. What does that mean? When you are an ego-based consciousness, your mind, your body, and your soul are on fire. What do you do when you're on fire? Anyone? Stop, drop, and roll. Why do we stop? Well, I'll tell you what most people do. Most people try to resist them when they're angry, mad, offended, right? They try to resist it. They try to stop the emotions with logic. We know that's impossible. They try to resist it. They try to go over it, under it, through it. And all they end up doing is accelerating further and further because they have no blood in their brain. And they're just literally leaning into the ego-based consciousness to put themselves farther away. If you stop, you can give yourself 90 seconds to get the blood back into your brain. If you stop, you can breathe. You can breathe and remind yourself where that center is, with your neutrality is, right? The greatest quarterbacks I've been blessed to work with, Troy Aikman, Steve Young, Warren Moon, they all are incredible. I mean, Warren, I called him Obi-Wan, QB1 Kenobi. That was my nickname for him because he was so at center. And you know, Trevor Moad, who I went to college with, teaches neutrality and center. I tell people, when you stop, give yourself 90 seconds, and then you can drop down to your higher self. What does that mean? Drop down to my higher self. You can drop down and be aware of where your baseline, your center, your neutrality is, so you can roll in the right direction. You can remind yourself where that higher frequency is that you woke up to with your plateau and growth strategy in the day. Remind yourself where you want to be and then roll in the right direction by utilizing your what, your who, your how, and your now. And it takes discipline to do that. This is all a practice. I'm still in the practice. My objective with this practice is to only spend minutes and moments in ego-based consciousness, not days, weeks, months, and years, and waste so much time, emotion, energy, and relationships like I had in the past. I want to learn to find the light, the love, and the lessons from those mistakes, those failures, and be able to do something. If you want to make effective decisions, you need to know your what. You need to know your who, you need to know your how, you need to know your now, and then practice ending fear to know your why. That will allow you to be productive, excessive, and gracious, efficient, effective, and statistically successful. It'll allow you to be twice as productive, twice as efficient, and twice as statistically successful. When I got out of law school, I made $1 million 9 months out of law school. I was selling legal research online in 1992. And I outsold every other person by 3 times. And nobody could understand how I did it because being the youngest guy, the one they didn't want to hire because I didn't have 4 years of litigation experience or any sales experience, but I literally was right out of law school. I told myself, there is 8 hours that they expect me to be productive a day in order to reach a $250,000 comp plan. And I said to myself, okay, 8 hours, $250,000. You know what? I'm poor. I'm probably the poorest guy here. I have no wife. I have no children. I have nothing but an expense account. I'm going to be productive 16 hours a day, twice as much. I'm going to be twice as productive, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then I said to myself, what if I could also be twice as efficient, create systems for myself? You know, for example, I had a strategy. If I can find 4 minutes a day from things I do every minute, every hour, every day, or every month, or every year. If I could find 4 minutes a day that I could save, it would be 28 minutes a week, 2 full days a month, 24 hours, do your math. It'd be 112 minutes a month, 2 hours a month, 24 hours a year. 3 full days of productivity just by finding 4 minutes the way I brush my teeth, floss them, and swish my Listerine when I was daydreaming. How many of us like brush your teeth and forget where you're at? And it took 6 minutes before I actually put a clock down and made sure it took 2 minutes. And it gave me 3 full days of productivity. 3 full days of productivity. So if I could be twice as efficient, I could take my 16 hours of productivity and make it 32 hours of productivity. And then if I could be more statistically successful by practicing what I do, I could take that 32 hours of productivity and make it 64 hours of productivity. And that's in the book that I gave all of you. It's called The Power of 64. And it changed my life because I was productive 8 times more than anyone else per day. And I did it 7 days a week because I believe there was activity I got paid for and activity I didn't get paid for. And I vacationed every day of my life. I don't need 6 months off or 6 weeks off because I'm always vacationing. 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. I was making sure that I utilized my man-made construct of time in the most efficient, effective, and statistically successful way. So when I made $1 million 9 months out of law school and they were giving me every single award and wondering how I did it and just making me and holding me on a pedestal, I was laughing and like, you blew out the comp plan. $1 million, 4 times 250. We weren't sure they could do that. I was laughing. Why? Because I had 10 years of productivity. I was well below the comp plan. I beat them with math. I beat them with time. And I continually to do that today because it grows on itself exponentially. Negative behavior is always in favor of inconsistent behavior. Let me tell you, this is the biggest problem that we have. Most people are persistent, but only to a point. They're persistent until people laugh at them, scoff at them, and make fun of them. They're persistent to a point where they stop believing in themselves and start listening to what's missing, what they don't want, or what other people want for them. And it's because they don't know the math of consistency. So if you're going to, for example, if it's going to take 20 years for you to get to where you want to be, and I'm going to use Gary as an example, because when I met him 4 years ago, I was at the Super Bowl. We were doing a little consulting for AJ for a sports agency, and they all wanted to meet this guy, Gary V. Don't really know who he is at the time. So I was like, yeah, sure. And Gary and I start talking, and he said, have you ever thought about building your brand? You built all of these great brands in sports. Have you ever thought about it? You have a book, you speak, you could build your own brand on the internet. And I'm looking at him like, who wants to watch a middle-aged mutant turtle speak on Instagram? You know, these kids are going to laugh at me, scoff at me, and make fun of me. And then they'll applaud me. So I said, Gary, that sounds good. How can you help me? He said, well, let's build an audience, a community first, and we'll figure it out. You're lucky you have the luxury of not having to monetize that audience. So you just want to build a community and we'll figure it out as we go. What would be your goal? Why would you want to do it? And I said, because I want to empower, you know, over 1 billion people to be happy. I'd like to get 2 ambassadors in my first year. Anybody here want pay me 10 grand a year to get me 2 ambassadors? So what's an ambassador? I said, ambassador is somebody that will not only engage with my content, but will tell other people to do the same. They'll tell them, hey, read the books, watch the TV shows, watch the movies, watch his IG, Facebook, LinkedIn, all his shows. You know, that's an ambassador. I want to. And, you know, I said, you know, would anyone pay me 10 grand to do that for them? I said, no, they won't, because they don't know time, exponential growth, compound interest, the rule of 72 of Einstein. But I do. And Gary kind of looked at me. He goes, you mean 2 followers? I said, no, 2 ambassadors, 2 people that will get 2 more people a year to engage with me. I said, really? I said, yeah. I said, because in 20 years, I was 50 years old at the time. I said, in 20 years, I'll be the most famous, engaged, influential 70-year-old on the internet. He says, how's that? I said, because in year 2, you're going to get me 2 more. So I'll have 4. So really, I said, any of you pay me 10 grand to get you 4 ambassadors in 2 years? Nobody ever raises their hand. And in year 3, I'll have 8. In year 4, I'll have 16. In year 5, I'll have 32. Anybody here willing to give me 50 grand, 10 grand a year to get 32 ambassadors? Nobody. It'll take 18 years at that rate of compound interest. It'll take 18 of my years just to get to 25% of where I want to be. 25% of where I want to be, where it would even be apparent as a result. There lies the problem. Is if we're doing something negative, it takes 90% of the time until we realize we have a drinking or a drug problem, or we're getting fat, or anything else that's interfering with what we already are, healthy, wealthy, and happy. We have interfered with our health, our wealth, and our happiness 90% of our existence until it comes apparent as a result, working in the negative behavior. It works against the positive behavior because nobody wants to work 90% and not see any results, so they feel stuck. I'll tell you right now, feeling stuck is a great thing because it means you're not fitting into what you used to fit in before. Any of you have kids and you're like, what do you mean you need new shoes? Dad, I'm stuck in these things. What does that mean? Their foot's growing out of control. It's a great thing. You need new shoes. Somehow we think being stuck means we're not growing. It's the exact opposite. If you weren't stuck, you would just be stuck in your comfort zone and feel fine without exponential growth acceleration, without the discomfort of growing and being in your learning zone. It takes 90% of the time to get to 25% of the way there. And then in year 19, you're 50% of the way there. And in year 20, you're 100% of the way there. By the way, that's 2 million ambassadors getting me 2 million ambassadors a year, then 4 million getting me 4 million, and 8 million getting me 8 million. Ambassadors. Not jokesters on TikTok liking my dancing bear routine. And trust me, if I took off my shirt and danced, I'd have tons of followers. You don't want to see it, but it's like the pimple popper lady. You just have to see it. Think about it. Negative behavior works in the favor when it comes to exponential growth, acceleration, and compound interest. So use positive behavior and remind yourself that you're in it for the long run. That you're in it to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential. That when people laugh at you, scoff at you, make fun of you, eventually they will applaud you. Every single thing in my life, I've adhered to that patience, reconciling with persistence. It doesn't happen separated. People ask me all the time, how can you be persistent and patient? Because I detach my emotions from the outcome and apply them to the pursuit. I detach my emotions from an outcome and apply them to the pursuit so that not only am I motivated every day to get up, get back up, get started, get back started with guys like Gary Vee and Rocky and Rudy and all the people I grew up with. If it's too old for you, I'm sorry, go look up those movies, they're great. But they will get you up, get you back up, get you started, and get you back started. But I live an inspired life by knowing my what, my who, my how, my now, and my why. And I'm consistent with it. And that's what I want for you. And I promise if you do that, you will make great decisions. Great decisions. You will invest in yourself. My mom told me since I was young, if you're not going to invest in yourself, what are you going to invest in? Ask yourself that. So invest in yourself. Know your what, your why, your what, your who, your how, your now, and your why. Make a lot of money. Help a lot of people. Have a lot of fun. And most importantly, be happy. And if you are happy and you can empower others to be happy and empower others to be happy, that'll make me happy. Together, we can create a collective consciousness of abundance, of more than enough to make everyone happy. I promise you, there's more than enough of everything for everyone. Just be consistent in your pursuit of what you want, and you will find it. You will live the mathematical equation of luck. All right, I am ready for some questions.
All right, what do you got for David, my friend?
David, so I was fortunate to hear you talk a little bit about your journey earlier at the Fireside Chat, and specifically some of the experiences that kind of helped you unlock a path to the person that you are today. And I'm curious how that spilled over into your business, and how did you take your team on that journey with you?
So it started, my transition or transformation started with my own values and writing out and taking stock in who I was, gratitude, which gave me perspective, forgiveness, which gave me peace, accountability, which gave me control, and then effective communication, which is two ways, not only communicating with each other, knowing that a tree has no branches, that one branch and never go to war against another branch, but also what I was connected to, which was a major shift in a paradigm of perspective for me, that I used to worry about the mountains in front of me. And until I realized that which made the mountains walk beside me or within me, my whole inspired journey didn't take its formation. So I took those four principles and created that as truly the basis of my company and my team. So when, whether it's an intern or a new employee or an employee that's been there for 20 years, they're evaluated on those values, how grateful they are, how forgiving, how accountable, and how inspired. I know that I'm hiring them for the skills that they have or the capability they have to develop those skills, the ones they want, need, or have already, that I can't teach what they already have within them. I have to allow them to pursue clearing away their true or higher self so they could execute on the skills, knowledge, and desire that they have. And I will tell you that, you know, running one of the biggest and most notable sports agencies in the world and telling, you know, kids who have dreamed about being a sports agent that you really don't care about anything other than they're grateful, forgiving, accountable, and inspired is an eye-opener to them. But when they realize, when they live that way within the values and they work that way or have activity they get paid that way, that they have the two greatest things of being a sports agent: getting clients and keeping them. And those values are what gets clients and what keeps clients beyond sports. And so implementing those values have been everything, and creating a clearly defined mission statement of making a lot of money, helping a lot of people, and having a lot of fun. Between the values and the mission statement, everybody is aligned. We've created a collective consciousness for the group.
Very good. Very good. Yes, we got, just pass the mic right over to that gentleman.
David, you mentioned you have, sticking to the values, you said you had what, two teenage daughters?
I have three teenage daughters and an 11-year-old son.
Okay, so I have a 12-year-old daughter. So knowing what you know about the world today, what type of values are you trying to instill in your daughters and your son?
Well, beyond those core values that I talk about, you know, I have a few things that I remind them of. I know I mentioned earlier, right, my kids don't listen to me. And I'm probably one of the most extraordinary moms in the world, and I didn't listen to her. But I know they watch me. And for me, I try to empower them through watching me and the way that I act and react to things, and allowing them to repetitively know certain things like, all I want from them is to be healthy, number one, happy, number two, I want them to appreciate me, meaning know that I'm adding value to their life, and four, I want them to love me. And within the context of objectives, I keep it really simple. You know, whatever they're doing, I always ask them, did you do your best? Did you learn anything? And did you have fun? If you keep things very simple and have your own simple one-liners that you allow them to make fun of you, like show me your friends, show me your future, be more interested than interesting, be kind to your future self, do good deeds, and they laugh at you, you are planting seeds under trees that you may never sit under, but you're planting them. And one of my favorite stories to this matter is I have a whole bunch of different, you know, content out there and sayings and stuff. Well, the sophomore at IU came home and she quoted her teacher, "Oh my God, this is so amazing, Dad." You know, and I was like, "Oh, really? Why don't you Google that?" And it comes up, right? Dave Meltzer quote. So her teacher was quoting me and she brought it home. And I'm like, "Are you kidding me? I've been trying to teach you this for 10 years. But since your teacher said it, it now makes sense." So plant seeds under trees that you will never sit under. Know that your kids are watching them. Make things easy with what those things are, like healthy, happy, appreciation, and love. Make sure they are doing their best, learning lessons, and enjoying themselves. Al?
Sorry.
Doing my job way better than I am. Take it away.
First of all, David, I just have to thank you, and no BS. In line with everything. But, you know, my inspiration has always been my dad, right? So he's run a very successful chain of nursing homes since the 60s. Everyone that works for him in Rome at his nursing home have been with him since the 70s. Why? Because he's always told me to treat everyone like a CEO. Doesn't matter if they're a porter or whatever. And you know what? It's It's pretty. So I'm just so curious because you come across so humble, so approachable. It's really, you know, a credit to you. What inspires you?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, what inspires me is what I'm connected to and through. And I think it's hard for some people to understand that I truly believe in abundance. I truly believe that I'm already connected to this unbelievable source of power, light, and love. And I didn't grow up. My family's very religious. I wasn't very faithful. But for me, when I realized what I'm connected to and what comes through me for others, to me, that is inspiration itself. That's in spirit. And it just builds upon itself. When I shifted my perspective from instead of going to get healthy, get wealthy, get happy, that I already was, I just had to clear away the interference and use what work ethic I learned from having parents like we have, using discipline and strategy. You know, I came up with this really simple thing that's amazing. I said, you know, I'm a math guy. I said, it's amazing. The minute I think about a possibility in my life, things that people laugh at me at, just like I would have laughed at Bezos 25 years ago with his, you know, bookstore in his garage when he told me he'd be the richest man in the world with the hugest marketplace in the world. I'm an optimist. I still would have laughed at him. The minute he said that 25 years ago, mathematical advantage over Dave Meltzer, because it was a possibility. And then when he became inspired, meaning he had the desire that he must be what he can be. He had a desire that no matter what, he was going to be consistently, persistently pursuing the potential of the world's biggest marketplace. He made his possibility into a probability, another mathematical advantage with nothing but thought and inspiration. A mathematical quantitative advantage from possibility to probability when most people are living in nothingness. They don't even imagine. My biggest fear for our children is technology has outreached their curiosity and imagination. I'm feeding science fiction to kids. I'm giving them whatever they can so they can keep the creative mind, more possibilities, more probabilities. And then to make the probability your perspective, now it takes the discipline, it takes the strategy, and it takes awareness to allow it to happen, to clear the interference. You can take anything and look around us, those who are maybe a little bit older. If somebody would have told you, I was CEO of the world's first smartphone when I was 30 years old. And when I held up the Windows CE device, a color device with a Bluetooth stylus, and we won Best of Comdex in 1999. And I said, someday you'll be able to speak on one of these things to China for free in full duplex, which means you could interrupt someone. Video, full duplex. People laughed at me, made fun of me, scoffed at me. It was already a probability. I just didn't have the discipline, strategy, or awareness yet in 1999 to make it a reality, but people did. And so to that matter, please, everyone, utilize possibility to probability, make it your perspective, ask for help, and that's how we get there. And that's what keeps me inspired.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Meltzer is no bull. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, everyone. Be kind to your future self. Do good deeds. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode in any way or found any value, screenshot it, share it, however you'd like. My only ask is you help me empower others to be happy.